I am speaking today with State Representative Dan Barrett, who was elected in a special election last December in House District 97 in Tarrant County. Dan, first of all, congratulations on your win in a place that everyone thought was a strong Republican territory. How did you do it?
Well, actually, even though everybody thought it was strong Republican territory, it's not as Republican as everybody thinks. It's a largely independent district, and that's the way we approached it, as an independent district. And, you know, I just, we had a campaign plan that reached out to people not based upon any partisan message, but upon the things that we thought people wanted to hear and needed to hear. And you know, I don't want to be, the word change is kind of getting to be a cliche nowadays, but that's what people were interested in. I mean, they wanted change, and they were receptive to that message, and they were not happy with the leadership. A lot of them didn't know Craddock's name, but they knew that they weren't happy with some of the things that were going on. And so, you know, that's the way we approached it.
Well, you mentioned Tom Craddock. That was an issue in your race.
Well, it was a big issue, yeah,
and,
very big issue.
You know, how did that play out, and how do you see that playing out this November?
Well, you know, one of the ways that we approached the whole leadership issue, and with Craddock being the primary figure in that whole milieu, was that, you know, the problems that are facing the state are not partisan problems, or they shouldn't be partisan problems. I mean, we all drink the same water, we all breathe the same air, all of our kids need health care, that kind of stuff. And when you have a leadership that will not allow elected representatives to vote their consciences and vote in favor of their constituents and not do what they've been elected to do, then that's not what representative democracy is all about. And even, you know, your most non-political guy on the street gets that. I mean, they understand that. And most of them had heard some of the things that had gone on in the House about Craddock refusing to recognize members on the floor and that type of thing. And they were just not happy with it. So the whole approach was, you know, even though these aren't and shouldn't be partisan issues, the leadership has made them partisan issues. These people, you know, the people in my district realized that they needed to vote for a Democrat in order to vote for independence, to vote for somebody who could actually do what they sent them down there to do.
And what do you believe they sent you to do?
Well, I think they sent me to keep the interests of District 97 in mind, and to you know, fight for things like clean air and clean water and lower electric rates, and the electric thing was a big deal, by the way, and CHIP, you know, get all of our kids back on CHIP, and that's a big issue for people in District 97, which is kind of surprising. It's a pretty affluent district, and everybody said you're not going to get much mileage with CHIP. Because it's an affluent district, and a lot of the people there, they don't need to have a subsidized health insurance program. But it turns out that while they may or may not need it, they're certainly interested in it, and they don't like to see kids going without health care, no matter who they belong to. You know, I mean, it's a compassionate district, and again, it's an independent district, and they like independent thought, and they know that. You know, they may not know the technical stuff about whether we're in compliance or out of compliance with EPA standards and that kind of thing, but they know that we've got a lot of bad air days, you know, and a lot of people with asthma problems and things like that. You're getting dripped on here. So, and so, you know, they're interested in those issues, and they want to see something done about them.
Now, of course, you were elected in December. You're going to face election again in November, and in between, you will not have actually served in Austin. There hasn't been a legislative session.
I haven't served in a session. Now, I've been down here a lot.
I was
going
to say, what can you tell people you have been doing in the meantime?
I was assigned to two committees that are significant committees. One of them is pensions and investments, and what, among other things, what it does is it deals with pharmacy benefits and pensions for all municipal and state employees. I mean, it's a huge deal. And the other committee is land and resource management, which, you know, has jurisdiction over all public lands and eminent domain and that type of thing, which oddly enough, I mean, one of the issues in my campaign was the Trans-Texas Corridor, and, you know, the what I consider to be unnecessary and abusive policies that the governor and the leadership have promoted in connection with the corridor. And there's a lot of other issues about the corridor. I mean, you know, the whole transportation focus in the state needs to change. But we've had, to get back to the question, we've had several hearings on the interim charges that the speaker has set, and those have taken, you know, lots of preparation and a lot of work down here in Austin. You know, a lot of people think that as a freshman, I should really sort of sit back and listen and not get involved in those things, but that's just not my style. I mean, you know, I've jumped right in and tried to get to the core of the issues, particularly in the pharmacy benefit management issue, and then again in the land and resource management hearings. You know, I was the one that asked Land Commissioner Patterson if he would defer to the United States Supreme Court on the parameters of the Bill of Rights, you know, and of course he told me that he would not, unless they agreed with him, which kind of illustrates the unreasonableness of the positions that are being taken. So, you know, and we're still working on those committee charges. We haven't come out with our reports yet, and you know, suggested legislation and that sort of thing, but. And there's been a lot of caucus activity.
Okay. So. You mentioned earlier electricity rates as a campaign issue from December. Tell me more about that and what you hope to accomplish.
Well, you know, I mean, what quote-unquote deregulation did in terms of fostering competition in the state of Texas was to give us a competitive system only on the retail level. We don't have a competitive system on the producer or the wholesale level in Texas, and that's one of the reasons. We have essentially it's not a free market, it's a price-fixing type system. And that's one of the reasons that we pay 30-35% more in the majority of Texas for our electric rates than the rest of the country. I mean, they don't here in Austin because they have city-owned utility. So I think we need to, the legislature, needs to revisit that whole issue and figure out how, you know, I'm certainly not opposed to free market forces, and I think that you can use the free market to the benefit of everybody, but and if there's a way to do that, I think we need to find it and implement it. I plan on doing a series of town hall meetings this summer in Fort Worth, and I've got a the plan right now is for a fellow by the name of Jim Boyle. I don't know if you're familiar with Jim. He's a lawyer that does a lot of PUC work and is intimately familiar with all of the ins and outs of the producers and the wholesale market in Texas and ERCOT and how all that works. And he has some suggestions, but more than anything else, I want him to come up and you know, give his program so that we can get a generalized understanding in the district of what's happening here and why we have the problem with electric rates that we have. When we have, you know, particularly up in my area, we've got all kinds of natural gas coming in from the Barnett Shale, and we have more oil and gas in the state than almost anywhere in the country, and yet we pay more for our electricity, and that just doesn't make any sense to me. We need to fix that problem.
Obviously, an initiative the legislature is going to be looking at again is that of school finance.
Right.
In 06, there was a special session that was supposed to be about school finance, turned out to be more about property taxes. When the ledge convenes in 2009, what do you want to see done on the issue of school finance?
Well, I mean, you know, it's easy for me to say I want to see us fix it. You know, now how we get there, I'm not sure. There's a lot of conflicting information that's coming out. I mean, I'm sure that you are familiar with all the statistics that are coming out of the comptroller's office and other places about the surplus that we supposedly have in the state. Now, if we really have a $15 billion surplus, that money, first and foremost, I think, needs to go toward education. I'm not sure that we really have that kind of surplus.
Well, some of that money is spoken for. There's money for the rainy day fund. There's money to pay for the property taxes that were allocated in 2007
That's
for
true.
2009.
That's true.
So there's a lot less free money available, if you will.
Well, you know, if there is no free money, then it's not part of a surplus. So let's not call it a surplus. So, you know, the first thing that we need to do is get a handle on the finances and figure out what we really have available and what we don't. And then, you know, we need to adjust priorities, I think, in this state. And public education, you know, I certainly don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist or anything else, but I think that public education has its enemies in state government that really would like to see it fail, and in favor of things like vouchers and private school. And until we change that, until we as a government, as a legislature, get behind public education and want to see it first and foremost succeed, then we're not going to be able to solve that problem.
Okay. Higher education is also on a lot of people's minds. Legislation passed in 2003 to deregulate public college tuition.
Well, that
has been very controversial. You know, where do we go on that?
You know, I'm not sure exactly where we go on that, but I think we certainly need to look at stepping back from where we are right now, because deregulation, if that's the proper word for it, hasn't worked. I mean, it hasn't. Generally speaking, whenever you deregulate something, the purpose is going to be to benefit the consumer by implementing additional competition, right? And that obviously hadn't happened in higher education. We've got other problems, and you know, I think I visited with Bill Powers, president of UT. He stopped by my office here a couple of months ago when we were visiting about the 10% rule. You know, I'm sensitive to the argument that there are a lot of kids who are deserving kids that don't fit the 10% criteria and therefore not being able to go to college. And that's something, you know, President Powers said, why don't we do that at 50%? Set the 10% rule at 50%. I think that's probably a good idea. You know, I wish I could tell you I've got the answers to those problems, but I really don't think that I do. And it's a lack of knowledge. I mean, obviously, we know that full deregulation hadn't worked, so we have to look at that.
Okay. I mean, immigration, of course, has been an issue in the news lately. What, if anything, do you think if anything, do you think the legislature can or should do on immigration matters?
Well, you know, immigration is a difficult issue because of the interplay between state governments and the federal government. I think that those people who say that we need to take on the entire burden of preventing illegal immigration into this country, into this state, are misguided. I mean, we've already paid billions of dollars in federal taxes to have the federal government deal with the problem, and they failed to do so. I think that the state government can and should put as much pressure on the federal government as possible to live up to its obligations and to enforce the laws that have been on the books for 20 years. If, on the other hand, we were to take Texas tax dollars and funds sending, you know, members of the Texas Guard down to the border and stationed a man or a woman every 500 feet, well, we may stop the flow of illegal immigrants into Texas across those borders, but what are we going to do about New Mexico and Arizona and Southern California and the Port of Houston? I mean, that's not going to solve the problem. It may make people feel better about it for a little while, but it's not going to solve the problem. It's just going to be a waste of money. Kind of like I feel the fence is going to be a waste of money. I think we have to approach illegal immigration in Texas as a multi-tiered problem. It's an economic problem, and it's a social problem. The very first thing that we have to do is cut off the economic demand. I mean, illegal immigration is going to respond to traditional economic models of supply and demand. If the jobs weren't available, they wouldn't be coming. It's just that simple. Now, it's that simple on that level. But when you have, and I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, the people that are mowing lawns and stuff like that. I'm talking about large institutional employers in Texas and other states where, and I believe that they're responsible, directly responsible for the vast majority of illegal immigration coming into Texas. And I think that's where we have to start, is sanctions on large employers.
Okay. When you get to Austin in January, what's the first bill you want to pass?
Oh, wow. I'm not really sure. I should have been ready for that question, but I wasn't. So,
what area would you like to put your mark on first?
Well, transportation, actually. I think that a lot of the problems that we have in Texas can be addressed and have to be addressed, at least in part, by looking at our transportation and the focus of our transportation. We're not going to solve any problems in this state by building more roads and putting more cars on the roads and stopping there. Now, we've got to have some more roads. Our infrastructure is inadequate as it is now, but we've got to change our focus to high-speed rail between major urban centers and light rail within urban centers. We've got to. My oldest son sold his pickup truck when he went to college up in Chicago, and he now works in Boston. So he's been gone six, almost 7 years, hadn't had a car since, and doesn't need one. I understand that, people love their cars and their trucks in Texas, and I do too, but we've got to change our focus. Not only will that help us with the environmental problems, but it'll also help us stop our dependency on petrochemicals, and we've got to stop that.
All right.
So transportation would be the first focus that I'd like to.
State Representative Dan Barrett, thank you very much for talking
to
me today.
Thanks, Charles. You bet.
All right.